from the Sky News Centre at 6. Arsenal chief executive Ivan Kazidis says the search for their next manager starts today. Arsene Wenger's revealed he'll be stepping down from his role at the end of the season after winning 10 major trophies since 1996. Kazidis says the Frenchman will certainly be a tough act to follow.
The football club now is in a very, very different place than it was 22 years ago. It's unthinkable to me that we are going to have another manager in the Premier League, let alone at Arsenal, who will be 22 years in tenure and have the kind of run of consistent success that Arsene had over those years.
Prince Charles has been approved to take over from the Queen as head of the Commonwealth. The group, which evolved out of the British Empire, has had Her Majesty at the helm since her reign began in 1952. A man who seriously injured two strangers by throwing acid into their car in East London has been jailed for 16 years. Resham Khan and Jamil Mukhtar were out celebrating Miss Khan's 21st birthday in June when they were randomly attacked in Beckton. The parents of the terminally ill toddler Alfie Evans have lost their latest legal battle over his life support. Alfie's mum and dad failed to persuade the Supreme Court that their son was being unlawfully detained at Alderhay Children's Hospital in Liverpool. Number 10's denied reports suggesting Theresa May's proposals for avoiding a hard border in Northern Ireland have been completely rejected by the EU. The UK has proposed using technology to help goods and people flow freely. Chancellor Philip Hammond admits there are still some complex issues to resolve.
Negotiations are ongoing in Brussels. I'm not going to comment on leaks from the other side about the progress of those negotiations. We've always said we're not going to give a running commentary, but those negotiations are underway and they will continue.
Rachel Weisz and Daniel Craig are expecting a baby. The 48-year-old actress says they're so happy and can't wait to meet him or her. That's the latest. I'm Elizabeth Secker.
Yeah, I think I've got control. I think it's working, yeah. Okay, hello, can you hear me? Hello, it's Tony Gosling here. No, it's not really. It's Steve Satan. I'm sitting in for Tony Gosling, but I'm with the usual contributor by the name of Martin Summers. Martin, tell us where Tony is today.
He's actually at the NUJ National Conference because he's a member of the NUJ.
Is he learning how to be a proper journalist and stuff like that?
Well, he's been active in the NUJ for many years, so he's going there politicking and doing his usual stuff, really.
That's so unlike him, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's my turn to take over the politics show. There's nothing happening in the news. I don't know what we're going to talk about, Martin. It's all gone quiet, isn't it? It's pathetic, isn't it? Yeah. Let's introduce our other guest, Councillor Tony Carey. You're for the Conservatives for Brislington East.
Good evening.
Welcome to the show. We're going to talk about sort of local and national issues, and then we'll sort of talk about conspiracy theories and international stuff in
I'm
hour two.
About that.
Are you into conspiracy theories? Do you like?
I'm a firm believer in that.
Do you think man landed on the moon? Do you think? Do you think Diana was assassinated? Do you think? I don't know. Do you think the moon is made of green cheese? Which ones do you buy into?
I firmly believe the man did land on the moon, but was Diana assassinated?
No, of course she wasn't. It's ridiculous. No. Tony believes she was, though, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Anyway, so Tony, you used to be your conservative.
I am.
But you're a bit of a sort of you're loyal to. You're not true blue, are you? You've been there, and
that is well known in the conservative field. They are probably all up there at Westfield Park now, crimping about what the hell they think I'm going to say in the next hour or so.
Well, you're
going
to say you like Tony Benn and do you like Tony? But do you, Tony Benn, you know, he's one of those characters. Okay, he's very hard left, but he actually got some sort of recognition and admiration from across the benches, didn't he, sometimes?
He did. For his longevity, but I took a turn against Tony Benn in 1965... when he came to Brislington School, as it was called, Brislington School in those days, it's called something else now, and he said what a wonderful system comprehensive education was.
Uh-huh.
But then, of course, I don't send my son to one of those.
Right.
And then he stood up there, and he's puffing away on his pipe, telling us that smoking cigarettes was bad for us. So I thought, oh, bloody hell, mate, you know, you're hypocrite was a new word in my dictionary then in my speech then, and he hit it twice on the nail there, and I thought, there you go, well up yours, and pal. But my dad thought the sun shone out of his hip pocket.
Right,
and he
right.
really did enjoy speaking with Mr. Benton, who was a first-rate constituency MP.
Right, right.
If you had an event going on, be it Scouts, Youth Club, Mothers Union or anything, it was very likely that if you invited Tony Benn, he would turn up.
So for you, how long have you been a councillor, by the way?
Just coming up to 2 years now.
Okay, so you're relatively new to politics as a representative or getting involved in
it,
are you?
I was a politician. I was a councillor 25 years ago for a short spell.
Okay.
But being a worker at the time, it just feasibly impossible to carry out the job and earn money for your family. So yeah. I let that slip.
So what are the issues that for you over the years have caused you to sort of switch sides or change your allegiance?
I thought John Smith, back in the day, he was spot on with his, I'm going to call it a social democrat type of politics. That democratic, yes, socialism at its core, but with sort of undertones of conservative financial control. That's how I saw it, and that's what made me join the party however long ago that was.
Right.
Unfortunately, as we all know, it was a dreadful situation. John died very suddenly.
Yeah.
Tony Blair took over, and I think the Labour Party hasn't been the same since.
Right. But, I mean, he was undoubtedly... It's a weird one. Tony Blair, because he was very successful, you know, in terms of winning elections and getting a yeah. huge majority and so on. And some people on the left, you know, the sort of people who support Jeremy Corbyn and Momentum and so on, you know, would criticise Tony Blair for being just a red Tory, really, for being too far right-wing. But you're sort of going the opposite way. You think he was too left-wing for you? Or
no,
just
no. I just didn't like the bloke. I thought the top of Tony Blair's agenda was Tony Blair.
Mm-hmm.
And as for democracy, when we then had... come on, who was the Chancellor?
Gordon Brown.
Gordon Brown. When we had Gordon Brown appointed party leader without a vote. No, the workers and the party members... had him foisted upon us. And see, I used to be a good bus driver,
right?
I thought,
yeah,
but I couldn't run a bus company. Gordon Brown was a cracking good chancellor, I think, a good socialist chancellor. Unfortunately, he couldn't run the country, and we saw that. And then when eventually Labour lost a general election, we saw the outcome. We were then, we believe, financially screwed.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So there, you know, so I thought, well, that's time to step away from this party. They're not the party I believe them to be.
But it sounds from what you're saying that your natural allegiances might actually lie more with the Lib Dems. Well, you don't fancy the Lib Dems at all?
One day, around about 2 o'clock one morning, and I'm walking home from the centre of town, it did cross my mind, but by the time I got back to Brissington, it's passed, the moment had passed.
Right. Okay. So, as a councillor for Brislington, what you know, what are the issues that are particularly Brislington-y that you're
right.
trying to work on?
The thing that is high on our agenda at the moment, other than the library, we might come back to the library
right,
later
right.
on, is the arena.
Oh yeah.
I think generally,
but obviously, no one's proposing putting that in Brislington, are they?
No, we want it at Temple Meads.
Right.
Now I have this super plan. St. Anne's railway station, I think it was called St. Anne's Park
yeah.
Holt or something like that, disappeared years ago, and there has been talk about somehow or other rebuilding some sort of halt there again. I don't think that's very practical, because you've got the two fast lines going through,
yeah.
there isn't now any room to put in two slow lines.
No.
However, go the other side of the bridge, and you're looking into the sidings at the network rail yard, which was the old marshalling yards of yesteryear. There is stacks of room, and there is one particular piece of line which goes up nearly to the arena site.
Right.
And my dream, if it happened, would be to have a bloody great park. Am I allowed to use that
word
on
really,
here?
But yeah, I think we'll get right. All right, yeah.
A blooming great park and ride facility in the area of Whitby Road, just off those trading estates there.
Yeah.
So the traffic, because you're not supposed to use your car to come to this event, but cars could come into the event and park in this super duper. Could be quite a secure multi-story car park, get on a little tram type train thing and be whistled straight up to the arena site.
Right.
The lines are in because they're actually using those lines to construct the site even now and take the heavy stuff up. So it's already there.
Right, right.
And I would like to see that developed and... you know, it would then take the fear out of people in Totterdown, in Knowle, in Brissington, about, you know, people coming in just dumping their cars and walking into the arena site.
Mm.
If that was, you know, when you buy your ticket to attend the arena, you also get free parking. You know, parking is incorporated in the price. What a big carrot that is for motorists then not to dump their car in the back of Beyond.
Yeah. But wouldn't your proposed site is still fairly close to the arena, isn't it? I mean, isn't the whole point of park and ride is that they're on the outskirts of town so that the cars aren't clogging up the arterial roads?
Unfortunately, Bristol isn't well coordinated when it comes to public transport and major evolutions. Let's not go anywhere near the metro bus just at the moment.
Oh, no, we will be going very near the metro bus. I've got a lot to ask you about that. Yeah, yeah.
But, no, we do need to a little bit of joined up thinking, and I believe we could get somewhere very positive very quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sort of the impression that Tim Bowles, you know, the metro mayor, has this concept, but I'm not.
Well, funnily enough, I've picked up something about, if I can actually find it, I've picked up something off the internet that Tim Bowles said. He's road skills and new homes on the West of England's top priority, says Metro Mayor, and he seems to be very sort of pro-rail. Transport is a priority. We've already allocated millions to kickstart improving our buses, bus routes, our busiest routes, including rail, road and walking and cycling. Improving suburban rail is an area I'm passionate about, and I'm working with the government and Network Rail to make sure we have more and better services. So, you know, obviously you're a fan of Tim Bowles because he's a Conservative as well, isn't he? But it sounds like you're sort of singing from the same song sheet there. Do you think, we will talk more in more detail about Metrobus, but obviously the Metrobus, from a point of view of someone like myself, is the gift that keeps on giving and giving because there's so much sort of delay and bad news and everything's going wrong, and I've got even more, you know, farcical stories about Metrobus today. Do you think the penny's finally dropped that actually, you know, we need rail based things and you can't do, you know,
always
decent public
that.
Transport on the cheap?
Always believe that. When they allowed development onto the old railway lines, big error,
yeah,
massive
yeah.
error. You're probably aware that in Brissington there is a section of line runs up from back of the old council transport depot there, runs up underneath Eagle Road and comes out of the back of Tesco.
Yeah, the Callington Road.
The old Callington Road link. Big debate going on in Brissington at the moment about whether that should be developed as a cycleway, a cycle and walking way, or a road.
Yeah.
Now, being a very keen cyclist, I wanted to develop it as a cycleway. I could then go from Brissington to Whitchurch and not probably touch the roads at all. However, currently, emails and messages to me are running about 4 or 5 to 1 for the road.
Really?
Absolutely.
Who's pushing for the road?
Well, these are all Brissington East people. Now, I don't think they've ever spoken to the people on Brissington West whose house it's going to run behind.
Yeah.
We do need to do something positive about taking that traffic out of Brissington Village because everything has to go through the village. It's congested, horrible little... I mean, it's a lovely area, really,
yeah.
having lived there all my life. But traffic-wise, it's a horrible little area.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I mean, you've talked about some of the Brissington issues. I mean, do you feel you can actually get anything done, though? I mean, because are you actually a decision maker, or does things tend to go over your head? And
no. When you're in opposition, particularly when, for example, you know, in Bristol at the moment, the Labour Party have the overall majority, they have the mayorship as well. we really we're just there, I think, at times to make up the numbers. Perhaps I shouldn't say that in front of witnesses.
No. You're on the radio. But, you know, you've said it. But it's good to be honest. You know,
that slipped out. But I mean,
we want to know what it's really like, not how it should be, or how you know how the fantasy is.
What is it really like as a member of the opposition? We work. I believe we work jolly hard to come up with concepts, theories, policies that would benefit the city. But of course, it's very unlikely that anything that we put forward will ever be taken up by the Labour Party. I can remember back in 92, I think it was. I told you I was a councillor then for a short spell. And Bob Wall was a leader of the Conservative group. And I remember him saying to me, I don't care how good an idea it is if Labour suggests that you vote against it. And I thought, I'm in the wrong party here. But because that really wound me up. Now, I think we're very much more lenient here nowadays. But and I do believe that the parties actually do talk a lot more than they ever did 25 years ago.
Right.
Quite a lot of good-hearted banter, but also some serious thinking. When we come on to talk probably about the libraries, if we come on to talk about the libraries, you'll see that in Brissington, the greater Brissington, we have two Labour, one Lib Dem and myself, and we four, I believe, are working as well as we possibly could to perhaps work towards a resolution. And I'm not pessimistic. I'm not overly optimistic at the moment, but different concepts are being put forward, and I think on that front there may be a glint
of light
in a very long dark tunnel.
So what do you think has been the change in attitude that's brought on this sort of slightly more cooperative, collaborative attitude amongst your peers?
I think the electorate, to be honest, because with the concept of social media, we can be found slagging each other off quite frequently. And one, it's not long, you know, if you're having a good hearty argument, it's not long before somebody comes on and says, will you two stop arguing, quibbling, and get on and work together? And this happens quite frequently. So I'm thinking, well, these people are right. They don't want to see us trying to put over points against each other. They actually want to see us pulling together, working as a more united front to help dig the city, not dig the city out of the problem it's got, because I appreciate where the problems come from, obviously, but help the city through this very challenging period we're going through.
Right. You also, just before we came on air, you were saying some quite nice things about our Labour Mayor Marvin Rees as well.
Yeah, rate the guy.
Okay, what do you think he's brought to the table, as it were?
He's brought passion. I don't think he's brought self-image at all. I think the last mayor bought that in abundance. With Marvin, you get a man who is passionate about the city, who has been brought up in an environment which would have put a lot of people down. And I have a lot of time for Marvin, and he's always polite to me, and hopefully I will always be polite to him.
Right. Okay, well, we might talk about libraries. Libraries is not one of the things I plan to talk about today, but we've got a couple of good news things to start off with, okay? Condé Nast, the magazine, reckons Bristol is one of the hippest places in the world to visit now and recommends we should come here. It talks about, for example, in Bristol, alternative art collectives and community-run cafes have courted creatives tired of the capital. It's the home of Banksy, after all. I'm not sure Banksy does still live here. I don't know. Is that sort of image of Bristol you want to portray? Is that good news? Are you happy with that sort of thing?
I'd like to see more serious employment in Bristol.
Right.
I'm going to harp on about dear Mr. Benn again just now.
Oh, yeah.
When Mr. Benn was Minister for Employment, Brissington lost Bristol Commercial Vehicles up there on the Bath Road.
Mm-hmm.
It lost St Anne's Board Mills, and we also lost Concord, all in the same 12 months.
Lost Concord?
In as much that they stopped building it.
Okay, but that
was... Yeah, so I'm blaming Mr. Ben for that, because he was...
Can you blame Mr. Ben for the world market on aircraft? I mean, I think that's probably a bit beyond his remit, wasn't it? I mean,
I've got to get a dig in somewhere.
But come on, you've got to be fair, haven't you? And, you know, equally, we could talk about job losses under the Conservatives, couldn't we? We've lost the Fry's Cadbury's chocolate factory. That's no longer producing chocolate. There's all sorts of examples.
They were promised that if it was taken over... They wouldn't move to Poland.
Yeah, yeah. And they did, didn't they? And who is responsible for forcing them to keep their promises then? Which government would that be? Yeah, you're
looking,
around
the room now, as if there's someone else.
There's another bit of potential good news. Are you aware of this one? Channel 4 might be moving one of its regional headquarters to Bristol.
I did hear something about this, yes.
So Channel 4 wants to not entirely move out of London, but set up a number of regional sort of sub-headquarters, I suppose. And, of course, Bristol with Aardman and the Natural History Unit and the Bottle Yard Studios and so on. So there's a lot of potential there. I mean, what difference would that make to Bristol, do you think?
I think Bristol is, as you mentioned, the hip place to be these days. Particularly Brissington East, actually, have you know. It's apparently one of the better places to live.
Is it
Bristol.
Full of hipsters and organic cafes
no,
and stuff?
No, it's real people, I think.
Right,
you know,
we don't,
and we don't have a lot of modern coffee bar-type cafe... vegan-y shops or anything like that. No, Brissington East is exactly as it was probably 40 years ago. We are getting there. In the Brissington West area, the Sandy Park area, they have a group called Spring. I think it stands for Sandy Park in Residence Improvement something or other group. And they have a definite plan, you know. Now, it's not my patch, and I've got enough to do without worrying about the other side of the Wick Road, but they really, I think they are the guys who to start, yeah, pushing Brissington a little bit more, I'm going to say Totterdownish way. But having then said that, I walked up Gloucester Road a while back, and I thought, what a fabulous place that is now. You know, you go up to Bishopsworth, and there are some cracking shops up there. Okay, yeah, you know, a lot of it is really just showrooms for online sales, but I was well impressed by that and very, thought, what a charming place this is to live. I used to go up there as a lad and swim in the swimming pool up there at Bristol North, and it's changed immensely now. And I think, yeah, if you can bring that to Brissington, therefore I'm going to be there with it, you know.
Well, it's your job. You've got to bring it to Brissington. You've got to make it happen.
Well, I'd like to think we could.
Right, right. You mentioned libraries. I've got a number of stories relating to housing and transport. I'm guessing those are two of your sort of the big issues that generally sort of face Bristol. Let me let you have your say about libraries. What's the issue there? Because, I mean, as I understand it, they're facing closure, budgets are tight and so on, and everyone wants their little patch protected spending-wise.
Absolutely. We believe that Wick Road Library is it is the only community building in the whole of the two Brissingtons.
Right. Of any sort?
Yeah. There is nowhere else where we could sort of say, let's hold a meeting tomorrow afternoon, we go to the library and hold it there. If we went anywhere else, we would either have to pay or it would be a coffee bar or a pub. So the library is the one in the greater Brissington is the one building that is publicly owned. Yeah. And it's a very active library as well. The staff there are wonderful staff. The supporters and the volunteers there, all grafting with this one aim, to make a plan to keep it open. And I'm sort of... I'm more optimistic now than I was 6 months ago.
Right. Is there a case then, I mean, given that it's the only community building of any sort, is there a case for sort of somehow rejigging it to be a sort of multi-purpose community use so where it actually makes money and makes
revenue?
Absolutely. Right.
Unfortunately, it's physically old building, it's single-skinned, it's single-glazed. It really isn't a good building in its for a modern concept.
Yeah.
But this is what we need. In somewhere along that Wick Road stretch, there needs to be this one building we can put a library in, we can put cafe facilities in, we can put health facilities in, mental health facilities, dental facilities, childcare, child centres, children's centres even. Yeah, give me about £10 million and I can get that done.
That's I can see a major obstacle in your plan there. I don't think anyone's got... you say that, actually. Some people do have £10 million to spare. Probably. I want to bring in Martin here. Health Secretary Jeremy Hunt has apologised for he conveniently forgot that he owned a load of flats, probably worth millions, and he's been a very naughty boy in not declaring it. I mean, do we forgive him, or is he being a very naughty boy? And you know,
this conflict of interest stuff is pretty predominant, isn't it, on all levels. And in a way, it's. Am I surprised? No.
But do you think? I mean, okay. Are you going to give him the benefit of the doubt, or do you think he's?
Well, no. I mean, he's obviously the real problem is that the fundamental conflicts of interest that people like that have. I mean, on the conflict of interest point, for example, there's been the Twitterverse this week has been talking about Theresa May's husband. His company owns big shares in BAE Systems, and as a result of the attack on Syria, BAE Systems' share price has gone up.
Yeah.
So, in actual fact, the May family has massively profited from the what's happened. And of course, I wouldn't suggest for a moment that that's the only reason why they've done it, but it's definitely the case that they have made a few bob out of it.
Right. Tony, do you have any shares or interests that you ought to declare now that
I do
a conflict of interest?
I do rent an allotment from Bristol City Council, yes.
Right, okay. So if we see a massive boost in spending on allotments, then we'll know that you've twisted some arms.
No, I'm a normal person. I'm straight out of Brisington, and I've said, I'll tell you why I stood it. Am I allowed to tell you?
Yeah.
The reason I stood was I was quite enjoying my retirement. I just retired, and I was beginning to travel the world again. And then we had the Bijan Ibrahimi murder.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And I thought,
yeah,
for crying out loud. I mean, this is literally around the corner from me.
Yeah.
I thought, I'm going to sound dreadful now, we've had Labour in charge of Bristol for a long, long time. We haven't had, and yet the people are still living in an environment that they don't particularly enjoy living in.
Yeah.
And if
you
visit that part of Brissington, it's not the most pleasurable experience at times.
Right.
A lot
of
litter, a lot of abandoned vehicles or perhaps burnt out vehicles.
Yeah.
Not a lot, but significant number. Silly little antisocial behaviour issues that take the edge off of normal people's lives. And so this is something I'm trying to do something about, but it is looming great long uphill struggle.
Yeah, there's no magic bullet, is there?
There isn't a magic bullet on this one.
But what are the long-term changes you want to make to improve things? You know, looking at the sort of causes that will result in a better environment.
Well, when Bijan Ibrahimi was murdered, the reasons why he was murdered really don't come into it. What comes into it is the fact that the perpetrators... families still live there. And I think, well, hang on. You know, about a year ago, maybe a bit less, 8 months ago, Kerry McCarthy, myself and Sue Mount-Stevens went walking around Capgrave Crescent. And the first door I knocked on, I was dragged in and told a very similar story to what we have heard about Bijan Ibrahimi. Racist behaviour,
right,
vandalism of his property. And I thought, well, how the hell is this still going on? Surely we should have our finger more on this pulse. So it took a while, and I don't see why I should have to move that person out of their environment. Why... are they not allowed to live peacefully in their own environment?
As I recall, there was a problem. You know, the police were partly to blame because they treated him as a cause rather than as a victim, didn't they? They treated him as the problem. You know, do you think things have improved in that regard? Have the lessons been learned there?
Unfortunately, as Sue Mount Stevens will tell you, she and her team are so stretched time-wise, you know, resource-wise, that we don't see a great deal of... I'm going to say Bobby's on the beat. That's not what I mean, really. What it is, police in the
frontline policing, yeah.
Frontline policing.
Yeah.
We don't see a great deal of that. I understand why, and I think you're probably aware that... A group leader, Mark Weston, there, Councillor Mark Weston, has been writing to, on behalf of all of our group at Bristol City Council, to the various members of the cabinet, saying, "Look, you know, Bristol is wanting to do more better, but it can't do better without better funding."
Yeah.
And if we were to get better funding, then yes, I think we will see Bristol leap forward, because we're about as lean as we can be now, and I think the city as an organisation is about as fit and as lean as it can be. All it needs now is the right nutrition.
So which party would be responsible nationally for sort of, you know, austerity then?
I wonder about that.
Well, come on, in all seriousness, you know, it is actually your party who's sort of causing this problem, isn't it? So and yet you still support them even though they're creating this difficult environment for you.
I support the party. Yes, I do support the party. I find it difficult to justify some of their fundings, though.
Right.
And I mean, I'm a governor up at a school, and I quite happily write to the education cabinet member and saying we need more money.
Yeah.
And. Inevitably, I never get a reply because I'm just one of 10,000 letters a day they get, I should imagine.
But I suppose, you know, the pressure all adds up, doesn't it?
I think there is not a weakening of resolve. I don't think that will ever happen, but I think there is an easing of the strings at times, and certain projects are being better funded.
Right. Again, I'd like to bring Martin in on this because this is a national issue. But I'll ask you, Tony, first. One in three millennials will never own a home because the price of housing compared to, you know, incomes is just spiralling out of control. What needs to be done?
Well, in Europe, it's quite the norm to rent until the day you die. And so I don't think... Perhaps that's a Brexit issue then, but I don't know.
we do need to build more houses.
Marvin's getting on with building more houses. Was with him this week at a new development, and I'm not going to sound turncoat here, but Maggie Thatcher's thoughts of selling off council properties was the biggest error in all of this, and then not letting those councils spend that money on developing more housing.
That's the issue, because they weren't replaced, were they?
They weren't replaced, you know, and Bristol has got a major housing problem, but I don't suppose we're unique in that in any way, shape or form. What we haven't done in Bristol, though, is commit ourselves to high-rise, and I think that's a good idea. Yes, we do have high-rise, but we haven't committed ourselves to it. I don't think there's been a new high-rise apart from student accommodation right in the centre of town.
Yeah. But that's only typically, I don't know, 8 stories. It's not, you know, mega high-rise, is it?
I mean, I would be quite happy with sort of 7 and 8 stories. I think, but I do remember a few years ago there was a plan to build a 50-storey building, something like Temple Meads, you know, round about the Georgian Railway, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Yeah. But Martin, I think you might be in danger of agreeing with Tony.
Well, I do agree with that. And as time goes on and debate goes on, people realise that things were done wrongly. And a lot of the problems we face now are rooted in that era. And I'm glad to hear that, you know, common sense is there. Because, I mean, in Bristol, as you know, there's a cross-party consensus about the housing policy. and that's as it should be. And I think really, as has just been pointed out, the real problem is when you do stupid stuff years ago and then you don't do anything to overcome it. I mean, we're 13 years of Labour government and they didn't change the rules for local authorities at all, did they?
No.
They just kept it the same as it was. And it was silly. It was silly in the first place. It was silly when they carried on doing it, and it's silly now. But there you go. And that's why you end up with people sleeping on the streets, because if you do stupid stuff for years, you end up in a stupid position, don't you?
Are there other factors creating the homelessness problem, though? I mean,
well, yeah, from my view, yeah, it's universal credit, because the private landlords have said pretty clearly, as soon as universal credit was put forward by Ian Duncan Smith, that they won't rent to people on universal credit, because the system is that it's paid directly to the punters and then the punters pay it on to the landlords in order to make sure that they manage their money. At least that's the
yeah.
theory.
Yeah, yeah,
but in actual yeah. practice, that just means that private landlords evict people on universal credit immediately. And in fact, a big Tory donor, as big as buy-to-let landlord in the southeast of England, said absolutely clearly, if universal credit comes in, I'm going to evict my existing tenants and I'm going to bring in East Europeans who will pay rent because they're working.
Right,
that's
right.
what he said. And if that's not divide and rule, I don't know what is. They
right.
could just change that, by the way.
Yeah,
it was quite
yeah.
simple to do. Just go back to the old system where landlords are paid directly.
Yeah,
but they can't do it because Ian Duncan Smith would get his nose out of joint.
Let me.
Silly.
Okay, so we're all saying we need more housing, which is fair enough. Let me sort of slightly give an about turn here. There's plans for 32,500 new homes in South Gloucestershire. There's a whole West of England plan approved for new housing development, mm-hmm. and there's talk of, you know, reducing the green belt and so on. It's not sustainable, is it? We can't keep building more and more homes forever, can we?
Absolutely, you're quite right there. Yeah.
Well, the problem is that those homes won't do anything about homelessness. I mean, I was working in Lyde Green not long ago. It's a whole new development that's only gone up in the last 2 or 3 years. But those houses are worth an absolute fortune, and no homeless person is ever going to be in them. So what we're talking about is the property developers dominating the policy, and the land bank, and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, if you we're getting to the stage like after the Second World War, where you've actually got to grab it by the throat and say, right, we are going to house people. In a place like Singapore, for example, 80% of people are housed directly or indirectly by the government, because if you think about it, it's a small place.
Yeah.
If they allowed a property market to develop, it would be a nightmare. But eventually, yeah, yeah. The property interest in Britain has always been predominant. Yeah, the landowners,
yeah.
The property developers, the standard middle class professionals who expect their free money from buying their house. In other parts of Europe, like Norway or Finland or whatever, nobody expects to make money out of housing.
Right,
you make money
right.
out of setting up businesses.
Yeah, yeah. One of the things that's happening, I think it's happening. I've lost the date here, but I don't think it's happened yet. There's a mass trespass. These things happen from time to time, demanding land justice. And they want, you know, distributed ownership and control, long-term stewardship. Okay, but I want to put this one to you, Martin. Increase in land value should be given to society. There's a land value tax.
There's an argument in favour of land value taxation.
How would that work?
Well, what it is the unimproved value of land. The value of land depends upon everything that's going on around it. So
yeah.
if you build a railway station, immediately
yeah.
the adjacent properties rise in value.
Yeah.
But that's nothing to do with anything that they've done. Yeah.
It's
in other words, it's what economists call economic rent.
Right.
It's where people get something for nothing. And if what you really need, if you want an efficient economy, is people shouldn't get something for nothing. They should get, they should get something for something. And if you had nationalised land, I mean, Tony Benn used to talk about this sort of thing.
Yeah.
Land nationalisation, then all the improvement and value of land goes into the public coffers. And in actual fact, in its most extreme theoretical manifestations, you could abolish income tax and things like this, because income tax is a tax on people working. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas
yeah.
this is actually money that that's the end of the middle class game of buying houses to make money out of it.
Right. You put your thumb up there, Tony. You agree with that?
The concept of doing away with any taxes attracts me. Very quickly, we witnessed in the recent past Northamptonshire County Council coming into financial severe financial strife. and we look at another Conservative council, East Hampshire, slightly different structure, actually talking of doing away with the council tax. We don't need it. And well, you think, what the heck? Why?
Well, one of the things we did was abolish the rates, not in Northern Ireland, of course, because they didn't dare. And the rates were much easier to collect. I mean, I did some research on this for Bristol Debt Advice Centre about 10 years ago. Rates are much easier to collect because if people don't pay, you impound the building. It's so simple. Whereas council tax, you're chasing people who are basically on 0 hours contracts, can't afford to pay, and you're chasing them for small amounts of money. Even when you catch them, the amount of bother you've got to catch them to get the money off them makes it a very inefficient tax to collect, and it's very regressive. You know, the top rate of council tax, and they haven't revalued the houses now for donkey's years. And of course, what we really ought to have is the rate system, including business rates, which was a very good system. It went on for hundreds of years, and it was a very effective system. But Thatcher abolished it.
Well, we do still have business rates, don't we?
Well, we do, but the point is that the business rate is going to come now to, you know, that went to central government at one stage, didn't it? And don't forget, most local government money isn't actually from local taxation anyway.
No.
It's from central government redistribution.
Yeah.
Because you can't really have a fair local authority system where poor areas like South Wales have got nothing, and you know, wealthy areas like Bristol get more money because there's more stuff going on here.
Yeah.
You've got to have some redistribution in the system,
mm-hmm.
and that implies some kind of central plan, basically.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's talk about Metrobus, because I promised we would, and it's the gift that keeps on giving.
Now, what's today's thing? Come on, what's today's thing?
Well, there is actually a new thing today, but I just want to talk about the other three things. Okay, firstly, the South Bristol route. It's vanished. You know, we were promised this route between, is it Ashton Vale and Henbury, Hengrove. And it's just disappeared from the map. It's not happening, and it won't happen, probably for several years, because it has to be self-funding, and it can't fund itself unless there's houses built to make the thing, you know, pay for itself. So there's enough custom for it. So, you know, have we been sort of strung along all along with this scheme that just isn't going to happen?
Those of us who have lived in Bristol all our lives have been probably sick to death of the various options that have been tossed at us over the decades.
Yeah.
And we were probably sceptical about the new metro bus system when it was muted however many years ago. I mean, it's the 10th year now since the soil was first dug. And we actually haven't got around. We got roads now, but the roads don't fit, or the buses don't fit.
Mm.
And a colleague from a coach company made a comment about what used to be the double decker bridge down there on.
Yeah, I know. By the Create Centre.
By the Create Centre.
I forgot what it's called. But
I'm not quite sure if there's a problem with the height of that bridge, even. And you think. Well, surely somebody must have gone out on day one and said, right, buses are 12 feet 6 inches, I'm being old-fashioned here, and put a ruler up against the side of that bridge just to make sure. And
I mean,
and then they come along with the bridge coming down through Ashton, down from, is it Winterstoke Road?
I think that's the one where the problems are. Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you know, the buses don't actually, they will wedge into it, and they get into it, but they won't make the bends. And I'm thinking, someone somewhere needs to be taken away and slapped a bit firmly.
Well, I mean, in all seriousness, you know, Karen Smith is up in arms about this, and not surprisingly. And it's been suggested to me, you know, is there a case for sort of getting the National Audit Office on this and finding out what went wrong? Because it's, you know, it's £230 million now, the latest bill at least, and we were promised something for, I can't remember, a mere fraction of that.
What we were.
And there does seem to be just, you know, incredible incompetence on the whole management of the whole scheme.
Well, someone somewhere will, I'm sure, take...
Heads will roll, you reckon?
Heads will roll. They'll probably promote them. That's a normal routine. but no, I, I, I put on my Facebook thing, you know, you can't make up any more excuses or any more.
Well, you can. Here's the latest
today?
One,
what's
right?
Today's bit?
Well, what I heard today from someone on the inside is this, that Metrobus will now no longer connect with Bristol Parkway. And the reason it won't go to Bristol Parkway is because the turnaround for the buses isn't quite big enough for the buses to turn around at Bristol Parkway.
No.
And as you know, and so the whole thing was promised to us on this idea of an integrated, you know, transport system where the buses would connect with the trains. And that, surely it's not rocket science. And these are the sort of fundamentals you have to get right, surely.
Yeah, well, I've driven 12-metre coaches around the bus terminus there at Parkway, and I can get a motor around there. So unless there's something restrictive in this sort of self-guiding system,
maybe it makes
it a larger turning circle. But I would have thought there wasn't too big a problem.
Right. Well, that's what I was told.
Well,
today.
I'm not arguing in at all.
And obviously, and as a bus driver, you know, there's this. You mentioned it now. This S-shaped bridge over down in or just off Winterstoke Road in Ashton Gate, and the rumour is that, you know, it's too narrow and too curvy for buses to run across this bridge or run safely. And you know, I inquired, well, have they run any buses as a trial, you know, to see what it's like? And I was told, well, yeah, they've run one and they were not happy about it.
I don't know what speed you're going to run over that bridge. When you look at it, common sense says you'd probably be doing about 20 miles an hour, because that's quite a tight bend, to be truthful. Plus, how high are you up? 30 feet up, 25 feet up, whatever you're up. And the last thing you need is for something to come off that.
So
you're going to be going around this now. You're inching your way around at 10 miles an hour, which defeats the object of a rapid transit system.
Yeah. How do you know? Obviously, we've talked about rail schemes that we want, or other, you know, just more public transport generally, other schemes. And this doesn't reflect well on Bristol, does it?
Oh. No.
So how do we, you know, how do we as a city restore our credibility in terms of, you know, managing transport schemes?
We put somebody with some energy, with authority in charge, and we point them firmly in the chest and say, sort that out. Now, whether that's Marvin who's got to do it, I don't think necessarily so, but it needs someone to come along and say, what on earth is going on here? And they would know who's chest to be pointing at when they're asking these short, sharp and very jerky questions. You know, what on earth, what buffoon made this so tight that we can't get a bus through it at 30 miles an hour, whatever speed they wanted to operate the system at.
Yeah. But you volunteering for the job, by the way, Tony? You sound like you have the expertise.
I'm too blunt.
You're too blunt.
I can be too blunt. But, I would have thought there are enough transport experts in this city to come up with the reasons why, and they can look at what has happened, what has gone wrong, not just once or twice, but over and over and over again. And the people of Bristol, I think we're going to have a flag day when it finally starts running, because
we'll all be dead by then.
Well, we might be able to put our coffin on the back and say, well, I made it.
The Metro hearse, yeah.
Well, that speed coming down Winterstoke Road, at 10 miles an hour.
Yeah, yeah. I've heard that at last someone has been appointed for a sort of a director of public transport to sort of oversee the whole thing. But you wonder, why hasn't this happened up till now? Why hasn't there been someone taking that responsibility?
When Marvin took over as mayor, I think he was just set back by the financial constraints he found himself facing.
Hang on, so we have to go back even further than that, because even before George Ferguson became mayor, the Metrobus scheme was going through the, you know, the wheels were grinding away, weren't they?
With the old-fashioned system, let's call it, of political swaying and doing and throwing each time you had an election, that probably caused insecurity on the political front, perhaps. But certainly, once we started getting things built, I'm just waiting for them now to say that the the terminus up on the M32 isn't the right shape or size, and they need to rebuild.
Don't joke; it probably will happen, won't it? You know,
it does seem. I can't understand why it's like this. I mean, when you take, for example, one of these large vehicles on a boat. Yes, you go steadily, and you're doing all sorts of manoeuvres.
Yeah,
getting it onto the Eurotrain, you know.
Yeah.
Getting those vehicles on is a challenge, but you do it. Nobody has a problem. So I'm just wondering why on earth something's gone wrong in the brain department somewhere that they've actually designed something you. They say you can't do it. I'm not sure what that is.
Well, I mean, because the scheme was devised before they had any vehicles and before they even knew which vehicles they were going to use, didn't they? So it really is sort of totally arse about face the way this thing's been.
I specifically asked, I suppose it'd probably be 4, 5, 6 months ago now, who has a contract for building the vehicles, and I was told nobody's.
No one yet, yeah.
Nobody's got, because we don't really know what they're after.
No, what make and model? Well, no one knows, yeah. Because it hasn't been. Oh, dear, right. Let's leave transport behind. It will continue to give, no doubt. A few more sort of national stories. I think we ought to talk about Brexit, really. And where do you stand on Brexit, Tony?
I voted for Brexit.
Okay, you're a Brexiteer, are you?
I am a Brexiteer.
The National Audit, the aforementioned National Audit Office, reckons it's going to cost us £39 billion. It's not looking good for Brexit, is it? It's not going quite as smoothly as you might have hoped.
It certainly isn't as smooth as I would have hoped. What hasn't helped us is Boris. am I allowed to say that? Yeah, I am.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Boris, he's been very quiet lately, and I think they're keeping him on a very short leash. I'm just waiting for the next statement. It's going to inflame everybody.
Mm.
In fact, a lot of the Brexiteers have been rather quiet for the last week or so, 10 days even. Boris, of course, is having his say about other things across the world and inflaming people. Anyone who truthfully believed we were going to get 350 million,
I think, a week, wasn't it?
A week or whatever it was for the NHS, they were. Boris might have said it, but then I'm a firm believer.
Well, it was painted on the side of the bus. It was pretty.
Well, it was pretty blatant, wasn't it? Yeah. Anyone who truthfully believed that was really, you know.
Well, the problem is, I put it to you that some people probably did, for real.
I'm sure they did, unfortunately. Yeah. I chose sovereignty. The reason I voted for Brexit was sovereignty. I felt that no politician, no political party in the last 30 years had put Britain's case well in Europe.
Right.
And we were being stomped all over in many aspects to the detriment of this country's well-being. And that is why I chose Brexit.
Right. Leave.eu and Aaron Banks are being probed over data allegations and so on. I mean, it's another big one. I think we might save till after the news, actually, because I'm sure. Well, Martin, I mean, are you sort of au fait with this? Oxford Analytica, not just Cambridge Analytica, but Oxford Analytica are in the news. What's their role in all this?
Well, I mean, there's a bigger question here about the role of what you might call PR and psychological warfare in fixing elections and referendums.
Mm.
And Brexit is only one example. You've got these, Cambridge Analytica, SCL, their core company, is stuffed with ex-spooks from MI6.
Yeah.
And they basically go around the world fixing elections, and they think they can do the same with ours.
Right.
And it's become a huge industry. And a chap who was a former British Army psychological warfare officer came to talk to us about 5 years ago now, and he said, well, I'm trained as a psychological warfare officer at Chicksands. I've now got a young family, and I've left the army, and I've got my own company. And I said, well, what do you do? I said, well, we go around the world fixing elections. And I said, does it work? He said, oh, yeah, otherwise they wouldn't pay us. But so this whole area of fixing elections by using big data, but also, you know, even darker arts than that, has become a huge industry.
Mm. Tony, I mean, obviously you, no doubt, being a Leave voter, were delighted that Leave won, but nonetheless, you must have some reservations that it might all be fraudulent.
I'm very upset that what I'm hearing now. It really winds me up. Because if it's all the same, for example, if I were to say, vote for my party and we will cancel all university fees. And then when that party gets into a position of power, totally ignores that. And that's what's really happened.
Yeah.
Vote for Brexit and you will have this, this and this. Blimey, we might get this, this and this, but it's not going to be next year.
No,
it's not
no.
going to be 3 years' time. It's maybe 5 years we're going to start seeing a difference. But I've... Perhaps I'm in this for the long run. Stupid thing to do at my age, but... I'd like to think that we will be better off out of Europe, because the more of the poorer ex-Soviet countries they allow in, the worse the situation is going to be for the wealthier countries. I can't see Germany and France sticking the bill for all the... For example, when Turkey chooses decides it's going to get its finances and
I mean, surely Turkey is a long way off getting its act in order so that it would be welcome in the European Union, isn't it? I mean,
I think it's moving the wrong way.
Well, the Austrians and others are determined to block Turkey, and of course, Turkey is now a geopolitical pivot state. Which is actually starting to talk to the Russians, even though the Russians and the Turks were at daggers drawn not that long ago.
Right.
And, of course, you've got Ukraine there, which is a basket case state. And, of course, what happened in the 1980s, I used to work in Eastern Europe in those years, and the British in particular pushed for a very rapid expansion of into the post-Soviet bloc.
Yeah.
The Americans push for that as well because they've got big geopolitical goals of containing Russia and so on. Whereas, of course, the Germans and others were much more cautious about extending it. And in fact, they kept specific rules about who could come and who couldn't come, and the limits on who could come. But I mean, you've got to see all this in the context of the Cold War and where we are now. I mean, the European Union is basically in the middle of the sandwich between the US and Russia, and Britain is part of that. I mean, the rest of the European Union regards Britain as basically an American poodle.
Well, I think
and that's why de Gaulle didn't want us in the European Union in the first place, and he blocked us. He blocked Britain's membership.
Yeah, well, do you think there's some truth in that? Do you feel that we're a little bit like America's poodle these days?
Oh, I better ask my leader for that. She will say no. No, she will say. Unfortunately, we have aligned ourselves to America, perhaps too strongly. I have no desire to get metaphorically and politically into bed with the Americans, other than they are the biggest fighting force in the world, and probably the most efficient, only because they've got so many missiles. I mean, there's an affair last week. How many of those missiles they send, was it? 40-something missiles.
Yeah, well, I mean... Yeah. But
a million pounds...
There was 103 cruise missiles were fired. 70-odd were shot down by the Soviet area Syrian defence forces, so they didn't even use the latest kit that the Russians have got there.
Yeah. Look, we'll have to take a break now. It is news time, but Tony Carey, thanks so much for joining us. You're welcome. Stick around for part two if you want to talk about international stuff.
I would love to stop, but unfortunately I've got another appointment now.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. And
thank you very much.
For the news from the satellite magically appears.
This is Bristol's BCFM on 93.2, online and on your mobile. BCFM is an award-winning community radio station for Bristol, bringing you national news on the hour, live from the Sky News Centre.